From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The U.S. Supreme Court and summer movies are the subject of our show today. By a surprising vote of 7-2, the Supreme Court this week ruled in favor of a Colorado baker who had refused to create a wedding cake for a homosexual couple. It was an important step for defenders of religious liberty, but it's not the end of the story. We talked to Michelle LaRosa of the Catholic News Agency about the implications. And then there are summer movies, and of course, we turn to Stephen Graydonis about the good, bad, and the must-see movies of the summer. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio. And of course, I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, the Register's Senior Editor and co-host.
Hello, good to be with you. I seem to remember there was a time when summers were pretty quiet. Not anymore.
I cannot remember a time when my summer was quiet. So, yes, the news does not stop. And of course, we're happy to have Michelle LaRosa on with us in Denver, Colorado. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So Michelle's managing editor of Catholic News Agency. I miss the days I worked in your office, Michelle. We'll be back in Denver soon to visit. So
great.
So this case about Masterpiece Cake really started out as a Denver case, and so I think it's great that you are on the show, being there in Colorado, that you can describe where this began. So what is the Masterpiece Cake case all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So, this is kind of right in our backyard, and the case actually goes back to 2012, the baker, Jack Phillips, owns Masterpiece Cakes. And in 2012, there was a same-sex couple who came to him and asked him to make a cake for their same-sex wedding ceremony. Now, back in 2012, of course, same-sex marriage was not recognized in the state of Colorado. And Jack just explained to them that that would violate his conscience, that he was not able to do that. And he did stress that he would be happy to make other kinds of products for them, a birthday cake, a graduation cake, something like that. But he just said that gay marriage itself was something that went against his deeply held religious beliefs, and he was not able to make that specific custom cake for them.
So this case basically wound its way through the courts and ended up at the Supreme Court. It's really the first such case that they are that they made a decision on, that there was a ruling on, and it was 7-2. So it was a very important win in some ways. Justices Elena Kagan and Stephen Breyer, as well as Justice Anthony Kennedy, who you don't always know how he's going to vote on this, they all voted in favor of Masterpiece Cake Shop. That's very important. But many people, Michelle, have said this was a very narrow ruling. So what did the Supreme Court decide in this particular case?
Yeah, so it was a narrow ruling in the sense that they decided it on narrow legal grounds, which means they didn't consider the question of free speech. They just considered the question of freedom of religion. But just through the lens of freedom of religion, they said that there's two main reasons that Jack Phillips should prevail in this case. One of them is that they said it was clear that the initial Colorado Civil Rights Commission that initially considered the case, the Supreme Court said it was clear that they were hostile towards Jack Phillips' Christian beliefs. They didn't treat his beliefs in a neutral manner. They did not treat his beliefs with tolerance and respect. Some of the comments that they made showed that they really were very disrespectful towards his Christian faith, and they were not willing to give it a fair hearing.
Yes, I thought it was it's also remarkable that the commission did not act in the same way regarding other bakers. So that was also a part of their decision. The Supreme Court's decision was that they saw that there was inequality in the way the Civil Rights Commission handled other bakers' cases. So describe that a little bit more.
Right. So the second reason that the Supreme Court used in supporting Jack Phillips was that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission had these three other instances of a different individual who went and asked different bakeries to make a cake that had an anti-gay marriage message. And in those cases, the bakeries refused. And the commission said, well, in this case, it was okay for these bakeries to refuse because they don't want to have to put this message on their cakes. Mm-hmm. But then with Jack Phillips, they said, oh, it's not you who's actually putting this message supporting gay marriage on your cakes. It's the consumer. It's not the maker of the cakes. So they used a different logic when they were weighing these different cases.
Yes, I think you do a great job, Michelle, in the analysis piece that you wrote for Catholic News Agency. It's titled Understanding the Supreme Court's Masterpiece Cake Ruling. And this was published on June 4th at CatholicNewsAgency.com. The Register also has a piece that came out a couple days later by Brian Fraga. It's called A Half-Baked Decision, U.S. Supreme Court Issues Narrow Ruling in Same-Sex Wedding Cake Case. And this, in Brian's piece, he kind of talks to various legal scholars who are saying where this might go. Like, what's the impact? How narrow is it? How significant is it? And one of the experts is Jerry Bradley at Notre Dame Law School. And he says, you know, this is really narrow. I don't even know if there are going to be other cases that this particular ruling will affect. And then we have another scholar who in the same article says, no, actually, I think this is a big case. This is Doug Laycock, a professor at University of Virginia Law School. And he says the people who are actually going to have to think twice now are the regulators. And Michelle, you kind of point this out. No longer will the Civil Rights Commission be able to act in such an unequal way. So it seemed that in your analysis that you thought this was a pretty significant significant ruling.
Yeah, I think the concern out there is that some people are saying, well, what this ruling does is it is offering a liberty to rule against Christian wedding vendors as long as you're careful about your language and you don't betray any open hostility towards Christian beliefs. But I think the thing that's key here is that it makes it clear that any kind of hostile and inconsistent enforcement is unconstitutional. So you'll have cases where they're going to be looking at this and saying, what are you doing in the opposite type of cases? If someone is requesting an anti-gay marriage message or some other message that you disagree with, are you allowing these vendors to opt out in those cases? It's definitely not a broad ruling that's going to affect every single case that comes before a court, but I do think there will be some other cases that we'll see mirroring the ruling here.
Now, if I understand correctly, the Civil Rights Commission actually has already been reconfigured, hasn't it?
Yes, that's true.
So are we seeing that as a result of this case? And I ask because are we also potentially going to see much more caution on the part of civil rights commissions that are pretty aggressive around the country, especially in certain states? Will this have any impact on them, do you think?
I think it definitely could. Some of the shakeup in Colorado was seen as a response to this case even before the Supreme Court ruled on it. So I think you'll definitely see commissions at the very least being careful about the language that they use, but perhaps even more so reevaluating some of their policies and weighing the way that they make decisions about some of these cases.
What's next, Michelle, for Masterpiece Cake Shop? Where does this case go now?
At this point, you know, it's been interesting in the last few days. Jack Phillips has had both outpouring of support and also kind of hatred. He's had, you know, there have been rallies showing up at his door supporting him, and he's also continued to get hateful phone calls. He's had death threats throughout this whole thing.
Wow.
So I think probably what's most difficult for him is that he for years had just run a simple bakery and wanted to continue doing that. So he's, you know, for now he's left in peace, but he's now a name that everyone knows. Not necessarily, you know, in a positive promotional way.
Does his case, was it actually decided or does it still need to kind of go back to a lower court or something like that in a technical sense? Could there still be a case against him since the court did not decide about free speech? They just decided that his expression of his religious belief was treated with hostility.
So that particular complaint the Supreme Court has decided on. So there will not be another case for that particular complaint, but it could be raised again if a same-sex couple wants a cake and the commission does not act with religious hostility, open religious hostility, then it could turn into a case where the free speech considerations are considered by a court.
Okay.
Yeah, Michelle, one of the things was noted about this case is that Kennedy did take the time in the majority opinion to reaffirm gay rights or homosexual rights. What can we draw out of this particular decision, if anything, of the current dynamic of the court when it comes to these types of speech cases?
Mm-hmm. It looks like what the court is trying to do is draw a balance in which religious freedom is protected and this idea of gay rights is also protected, and trying to figure out what that balance is. Of course, when gay marriage was legalized, the Supreme Court said, okay, this is now going to be recognized throughout the country. Kennedy does go a step farther here by saying that that in these cases, gay people should not be subjected to indignities when they're seeking goods and services on the market. So now it's looking more at, does this person feel that their dignity has been violated? And that is somewhat vague language. And I think that is leading to some of the concerns about whether this could open the door for rulings against Christians. So that is taking it one step further when we're talking about dignities in the free market. At the same time, it's not opening the floodgates like it could have if the ruling had gone the other way and said you're never ever allowed to refuse service if you disagree with a particular event such as a gay wedding.
So it seems most likely that many of these other cases that are out there, there's a florist in Washington State, a web designer in Colorado, a calligrapher in Arizona, all of this having to do with people who do direct services for weddings, all of these cases, one of these cases, I should say, is bound to make it back to the Supreme Court. And at some point in time, they're going to need to clarify what they mean when they say there needs to be this mutual respect, because it's just not inherent in everyone to know exactly what that means. Well, Michelle, we're really grateful for your reporting on this. You've done this beat for a long time, so we appreciate your insights.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
And of course, our listeners can go to www.catholicnewsagency.com. To find the latest coverage on these religious liberty cases and much, much more. When we return, we'll be talking to Stephen Gray Donis about summer movies here on Register Radio on EWTN. More when we return.
Father Wade Menezes talks about the National Catholic Register.
As the National Catholic Register celebrates its 90th anniversary, I think that says a lot about the publication. It works. It's solidly Catholic. It presents the teachings of the Church, unabashedly so, and also guides its readers to be even more solidly Catholic themselves. One of the major effects that I think the Register has on its readers is that it elevates the intellect. Whether it be a faith item or a news item, it presents the news and the faith item in a very balanced way. One thing that the Register can never be accused of is being too far left or too far right. It is solidly Catholic, right in line with the Chair of Peter. And I think that says a lot about the Register.
For a 6-issue free trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy some of our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I'm joined, as usual, by Matthew Bunsen, my co-host and a senior editor of the National Catholic Register. So Matthew is the movie viewer. I am someone who doesn't get to see very many movies these days, but there are many Hollywood big releases that are already underway for the summer. And our Catholic moviegoers always like to know what movies they should see and what movies maybe they want to avoid. So we like to offer this opportunity to give you some ideas of what to look forward to and what to make sure you put in your summer viewing. And here joining us now to help guide us through the summer is our film critic, Deacon Stephen Graydonis. Deacon Stephen, welcome back.
Hi, Jeanette. It's good to be back.
So, Matthew, I'm going to let you jump in because you have probably already seen some of these movies as I have not.
I have. In some cases, I wish I hadn't, but yes, I have. And I can. My heart goes out to you, Deacon, because I know you have to see a vast number of films every year. But when you have any
writing about them is very cathartic.
Very good point. Yeah. Well, I was going to say that here we are already in the summer blockbuster season, and the king of Hollywood, as you like to call it, is Disney's Marvel Cinematic Universe, or the MCU. Where they have managed to create not just a franchise, but an empire of films. And just, in the last couple of months, we've had Black Panther and now Marvel, and more on the way.
Yes. Marvel has apparently declared that summer now begins in February with Black Panther, and they've already followed up with Avengers Infinity War. We haven't even gotten to Ant-Man and the Wasp. And the third movie on this year's top films at the box office is another Marvel hero, not part of the MCU, Deadpool, the Ryan Reynolds franchise. DC is really kind of reeling in Marvel's continued dominance at the box office. And Disney is trying to do the same kind of shared cinematic universe with the Star Wars franchise. Solo, which is in theaters right now, is kind of their first box office stumble. So we'll see how successful they are in trying to perpetuate that.
Yeah, so we have the Marvel Cinematic Universe compared to the much more problematic DC Universe. They've had some real problems trying to get that off the ground, haven't they?
Yes, and I don't know if Aquaman in December is going to turn that around. Next year, we've got Shazam coming up, which is about DC's Captain Marvel. That's not to be confused with Marvel's big screen Captain Marvel coming next year, who's actually a woman, Brie Larson. Next year, I do expect Wonder Woman 2, which brings back Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot to build on the success of the first film in that franchise.
So we have one film after another, but there doesn't seem to be any sort of consumer or viewer exhaustion where this universe is concerned. Is that a consequence of just good filmmaking, good character building? What is it about the sort of insatiable appetite for these Marvel films?
Maybe they've sold their soul to the devil. I really am curious to understand just how they've managed to be so successful with what is really very television style filmmaking on a big screen format. For me, this is something that in a very important way doesn't work, because a movie has to be a big event. You're spending money, you're going to the theater, you're sitting down for, you know, 2.5 hours potentially, and yet these stories are all middle act. They don't have a beginning, a middle, and an end. They just string you along, and maybe that is the secret. Maybe the secret is just that people have to they want to keep coming back because they want to find out what happens next, but you never get the exclamation point at the end of the sentence. And that was certainly the way that I felt about Avengers Infinity War. I admit I want to see the second installment. So maybe that's the answer to your question.
That's sometimes what happens to me and why I don't start a new series just on Netflix or whatever, because I don't want to be strung along. I just don't have time for that. I just want to see something that has a beginning, middle, and end. But it's actually really hard in general to find something like that. You do have some family movies this summer. Those are the kind that I'm probably more likely to see, although my kids are really too young to take to the theater yet. But it's the kind of movie that I enjoy because I don't have to think too much. So what are some of the family movies I might enjoy this summer?
So I think without question, the 800-pound gorilla in family entertainment is going to be Brad Bird's Incredibles 2. This is a movie that we have been waiting for a
very long time.
And the first Incredibles, I think, is one of the 10 greatest animated films ever made. And Brad Bird is clearly a very gifted filmmaker. He picks up in this film. I just saw it this morning and this afternoon with my lady Suzanne. And so he picks up right where the first one left off, with the appearance of John Ratzenberger's Underminer. which turns out to be a waste because the movie doesn't really have any idea where to go with him. Instead, it's a story about an effort to rehabilitate supers in the public eye. And the upshot is a reversal of the first film, where now Elastigirl has a wealthy benefactor who's putting her into action while Mr. Incredibles stays home with the kids. So,
interesting,
you know, it's about exploring that family relationship within this larger dynamic of society's relationship to superheroes. And I think Brad Bird has a lot of good ideas, as he always does. I don't think he pulls them together as satisfyingly as he did the first time around.
Okay. What about anything else in the family realm or in the animated realm?
You know, I'm a little bit looking forward to Teen Titans Go to the movies because
really?
I'm so
what's the exclamation point we have to add?
Yes. You know, I'm so frustrated that we seem to be pitching these superhero movies always, all the time, to the PG-13 audience.
Okay.
And my ongoing frustration is, other than Disney Pixar, Hollywood isn't making anything for children. Mm-hmm. They're not making anything. You know, the best family film this year so far has been Paddington 2, which is just wonderful. It's a British import. We don't make these movies domestically anymore. So if the Teen Titans movie turns out to be any good, and then later this year we've got a Spider-Man cartoon coming from Sony, I think that could be salve to the wounds that I feel that I can't share big screen superheroes with my youngest kids the way that, you know, when I was a kid, you know, that's the my comic books, the stories were aimed at children, and now everything's aiming at that PG-13 level. I think that's unfortunate.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say one of the titles that we've been talking about as a team, that Register's team, is the Mr. Rogers documentary. You won't be my neighbor. Won't you be my neighbor? Excuse me. Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you be my neighbor? We've been talking about it because, well, first of all, there's a ton of buzz about it in the sort of Catholic or Christian world. But have you seen it? And what are you thinking? What are you thinking about it?
I have, and it's in theaters this weekend. This is one of the movies so far this year that I'm most enthusiastic and urging just everyone to go see. It has got interviews with colleagues, with Roger's widow and his sons. It's got archival cut footage from the show. But what comes across above more than anything else in this documentary, 90-minute documentary, is just the goodness and the gentleness that we remember from having watched this show as children. It's real. It's who he was 24 hours a day. And you really see that as you watch the documentary. This is, you know, Mr. Rogers is, as improbable as this may seem, his reputation has actually grown in recent years.
Right.
People, I think, sense that the times that we're living in are becoming, you know, in many ways crueler and harsher. And we recognize that we're not living the way that we should be. And we all kind of look back to Mr. Rogers, and we know that what he told us when we were kids growing up is the truth.
Right.
And I think that's what people are really being affected in a powerful way by this documentary, because there's a spiritual depth to it. You know, he was a Presbyterian minister, he was a Christian, and his faith, which is one of the subjects that they talk about in the film, really comes through in a powerful way.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the other films that might be a bit off the radar that people might want to consider this summer?
You know, I'm kind of looking forward to what looks like an offbeat comedy called Tag, which is about ongoing game of tag among four friends that lasts for decades. Not off the beaten path at all, but I have to say the movie I'm most looking forward to is probably Mission Impossible Fallout. Somewhat improbably, after, you know, decades, and for the first three films of the franchise, what I thought was largely spinning their wheels, Mission Impossible has become the most entertaining franchise out there. And unlike Star Wars and the Marvel films, they tell their stories with a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah.
They're ridiculously entertaining. They have brilliant set pieces, spectacular stunts, humor. Now that they've managed to put together a good team, Simon Pegg, Ving Rhames, Jeremy Renner, now they've brought in Rebecca Ferguson. And if they pull this off, the last three Mission Impossible movies will just be the most satisfying action trilogy, and I don't know how long.
And yeah. Rebecca Ferguson is worth just in herself the price of the ticket.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Yeah.
I have more to say than I thought I did. So Tag, going back to Tag, isn't there,
yes.
I know it's not really a part of the movie, but isn't there a priest who was involved in the original people who started this game of Tag?
I had not heard that. I know that it's a fact-based story. Jeremy Renner also is in this one, Ed Helms, John Hamm. And the trailer just looks like an absolute blast. If the movie pulls it off, it will. It's so offbeat. It's not a brand name. It's not anything that you've ever heard of before.
I had heard that some of the original members who played this game of tag are either a priest or very religious. We were trying to follow, you know, track them down, but you know, these movies are based in part on these. But
there is a character for I'm reading our Wikipedia right now. Sebastian Maniscalco plays a character who's only called Pastor. I don't know if that's
okay.
Maybe that's
what I'm thinking.
Person in question.
But let's squeeze in one more. I think you wanted to talk about Mamma Mia.
Well, I wanted to mention it because the first film was such a hit, and really musicals have been not something that necessarily critics have been raving about, but that have connected with audiences in a very powerful way. The Greatest Showman last year with Hugh Jackman was a huge popular hit. The first Mamma Mia, and you know, these movies also, what they have in common with Mission Impossible is a desire to entertain, to just throw everything that they can at the audience, not in, you know, the way of like fan service and getting really geeky about the plots the way that the Marvel and Star Wars movies do, but just connecting with people in a very straightforward way. And that's something that I can appreciate in a movie like Mamma Mia, even if, you know, as the critic snob in me kind of, that's not really what I'm about.
Right.
But I appreciate a movie that just wants to entertain you and doesn't necessarily feel like it's there to sell you on coming back for the sequel.
Deacon Steven, you're always a lot of fun when you're on Register Radio. So thanks for joining us again. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, to check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. And, of course, you can always look for Deacon Steven's films. He reviews them regularly for us. Also, check out our podcast at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.